You know, hats off to all the guys who have now spent 5 or 6 hours in relationship kind of...
learning mode.
Yeah, learning mode, and returning for the Q&A. I mean, if it were me, I could maybe go, you know, the Q&A is just kind of a bonus, and we're okay without the bonus.
Listen, for the women in the room, for men who have the typical male brain wiring, which not everybody does, but, you know, say 75%, 80% of men, spending Friday night and Saturday morning talking about relationships is not a man's natural habitat. Like, this is truly, like, he's here because he loves you.
For sure.
Okay.
Let's get started. Oh, hold it. One of the things that we will do is some of the slides that we weren't able to show on last night, mm-hmm. we're going to put them up at some point.
We got so many questions that didn't necessarily get voted up on the sex questions.
Oh, okay.
That are relevant. So before we go to the top questions, how about I'm going to just address a couple of the sex questions by showing you some of these slides from last night.
Then take a picture so you can have the slide with you.
So let me just add on top of that, we are recording this, so we will put it online here in the very near future. So you can come back and reference that.
Yes, absolutely. So this is just the pie chart that we were talking about yesterday, in case anybody wants to take a picture of that. This is the numbers of how often nationally people are connecting. So this is the one that I was describing to you last night. But this is a chart that I hope everybody will take a picture of right now, because we're going to ask you to talk about it later. So this is the chart that actually shows, so if a wife, what percentage of wives have initiating desire, what have receptive desire, resistant desire, what percentage of husbands, etc. And you can actually see what percentage, like, the different categories have. And this gives you a chance to look at this and go, where are we? Am I a husband with resistant desire, married to a wife with receptive desire? Am I a husband with initiating desire, remarried to a wife with receptive desire? Whatever that looks like, which block do we fall into? And there's going to be some things that will matter for you that won't matter to the couple sitting next to you, that are probably a good idea for you to discuss. So I want to make sure that everybody got that before we go to any of the sex questions that came up. Okay, so first question. This obviously was a very important one to a lot of people. When a conversation starts to go sideways, what's the fastest way to reset without making it worse? And this is obviously, there's probably some counseling wisdom. I will tell you that one of the things that I learned when I was doing my PhD program and doing, like I said, some of the neuroscience classes, etc., is just how much a difficult conversation can activate what's called the sympathetic nervous system in your body. Now, our bodies, just so you know, our bodies have two different nervous systems. The sympathetic one is the one that jacks us up. It's the fight or flight system. It's the one that's like, I feel like I'm being accused and criticized and attacked, and my system goes slightly nuts. And so I get defensive, and I'm flooded, and I can't think emotionally. And then there is the parasympathetic nervous system, which is, think about a parachute bringing you gently down. And the parasympathetic nervous system is the one that, when you're jacked up like that and when you feel like a conversation is going sideways, you want the parasympathetic nervous system to become the one that comes back in control of you, so that you can think, so that you can process well, you can regulate your emotions well. And so to reset, there's a couple things that are recommended that we all do. And this is like basic emotional body regulation to try to put the parasympathetic system back in charge. So one of them, that this is something counselors recommend, is literally to say, I feel like we're in a loop, we're going in the wrong direction. Can we just take a 20 or 30 minute break? Because I care about you, you care about me, I feel like we're saying that we don't, like, and let's just take a break, give our brains a chance to rest, think about what we're saying. And so that's probably, from a counseling perspective, that's what I've heard of as one of the main tools.
No, that's spot on.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
And then another thing. Can I tell them about the? Okay. Another thing. This is actually a tool that a lot of people have used as part of not just couple regulation like that, but your own emotional regulation about yourself and your sympathetic nervous system. So this is something that, do we have any first responders in the room? Do we have any first responders? Okay, no, I guess not. So this is something that all first responders are taught. Law enforcement, firemen, military, fire people, I guess, not firemen. But anybody who has been in that kind of system where their sympathetic nervous system gets jacked up because they're going into a difficult situation, they're taught what's called box breathing. And this is something that anybody can do. And it's, you can look it up online, but look up box breathing and practice it. And it is astounding how it brings you back down and you're suddenly able to regulate and reset.
Can I jump in with one thing?
Absolutely.
Because there was a question later on that down the list, I don't know where it was it said, have you ever seen marriage advice that was not good?
Yes.
Other instances of it. And this kind of relates to this. Some of the marriage advice or some of the advice that we've heard is like sometimes you got to vent a little. You got to let some steam out because, you know, you don't want the pot with the cover on it to explode, you know, on the stove if it's keep going. And this is to your sympathetic, mm-hmm. parasympathetic nervous systems. What studies have found is that venting is actually not the best approach because what you are doing in those things, when you let those words out or that anger out, you're actually activating the anger systems inside your brain and making them even more
yep.
agitated. Instead, the solution is what Shanti was kind of just describing is the better solution for that pot
that's boiling.
Is to remove it from the source of heat and perhaps think of something else. Think of whatever is lovely or noble or whatever, worthy of praise. Maybe it's baseball scores. I don't know. But maybe there's something that you can do that takes your mind off the moment and lets the system calm down. Box breathing.
Yep. Okay, good. Did you have something you wanted to say as a counseling on that topic?
I would say that clearly what Shanti and Jeff has just talked about are great steps to take in this process. And sometimes it's just a matter of saying, hey, can we, you know, when you say something that you wish you hadn't said or done something you wish you hadn't done, it's like trying to get the toothpaste back into the toothpaste bottle, which just is nigh impossible, right? And sometimes it can be really effective to just say, hey, look, can I get a reset here and do this again? Can we just like pretend that never happened? And because my brain was totally offline just now, and restart this conversation. And it might be after just a short break, right? And getting that short break for the amygdala to calm down and for everything to settle in is paramount. But I would say this. Make sure you decide upon a definitive amount of time and be sure
yep.
to come back
Great.
To it. Don't just push it off to the side and then don't deal with it.
And so. I would also say one of the things that a lot of counselors have told me, because my PhD is very research oriented, it's not a licensed counselor PhD. One of the things that many active counselors have told me is that if you will do something like that, you'll learn what works for you and what doesn't. So like saying a reset, we need to take a reset, it doesn't work unless, for example, one party says, I want you to know we're okay, we'll get through this. Like you have to have that reassurance or whatever. Like you'll learn how that works best for you. Okay.
I love this next question.
Next question.
Is there any data on how frequency of sex changes by season of life? Actually, yes
there is.
It was our study, and it was actually super fascinating to me. And I'm just going to give you a really quick flyover. The what we found is that level of frequency, intimacy frequency, in the 20s was, say, at this level, and then every decade it began a decline. So in the 30s it was a little less, 40s a little less, and then there was an uptick in the 50s. And then it kind of plateaued and maybe slowed a little through the 60s and 70s. But it was kind of like, huh, what's going on here?
In the 50s when you're an empty nester and nobody at home. All okay.
Right. There you go. We don't have to necessarily wait until, you know, whatever.
So just so you know, all of that, if that's your story, that's totally natural.
It's totally natural.
Yes. Okay.
That would be like when my daughter says, why can't I come on vacation with you and mom? Okay.
Yes. Okay, so, hold on. I accidentally marked one as answered that shouldn't have been answered. You do the next one because I got to find it.
What does it look like? What does it mean to put God into a marriage other than to attend church?
We had like three or four questions about that.
Yeah. Well?
I have a thought.
Yeah. This isn't something that we've necessarily got research data on. It's stuff
we just
that,
saw different examples.
Exactly. Yeah. So what's your thought?
So, okay, other than attend church, first of all, attending church is by far statistically the most important thing. Because,
preservative.
Well, because what it does is it comes with all sorts of other things. Just attending church on its own, if all you do is sit and listen and walk out the door and you don't plug into community, I don't know how protective that will be. I mean, you're still getting good teaching. You're still sitting in worship. You're worshiping the Lord. All that's got to help. But connecting into community is a key way of putting God at the center of a marriage, because God tells us to do that in order to put him at the center of our lives. And there was actually a great question somewhere way down below, which I don't know where it is, but it was a question about how can we plug more into a church community. And so I don't know what your system here is at the church, but I'll let you answer that.
Yeah, let me address that on a couple of fronts. One, here at Rest and Bible, and I know other churches do this as well, but we really emphasize small groups called shepherd groups, where it allows folks, couples, families to gather once a week or biweekly in a small group and really do life together and be able to come alongside. And it's having a community, a support system, if you will, and to really dig into the Word and what's going on, and really have a community, a life, you know, much like it talks about in the early church there in the book of Acts. And that is a powerful thing that, you know, we find most of the couples that come to us that are dealing with issues are not in community. And they're really isolated, alone, and they don't know where to turn. And that's a great first step to really being able to plug in and get some support, especially if there's couples there that have already been through it and can look back and provide some wisdom and insight. Equally as much as we've talked about, you know, here we at RBC, we have Homefront, which is intended for couples focusing on marriage and family-related topics, and really try to come in and shore up some of those areas in our lives. And it's an opportunity, again, to have a connection and community among others that are seeking wisdom and guidance from a biblical perspective on how to do it and do it well.
And that's also an answer to the one that I just highlighted, where somebody was saying, like, we haven't really connected, you know, and my wife connects more naturally, which is not uncommon for the wife to connect more naturally. And how you build deeper friendships and is truly, like, you want to do this, you know, it's necessary. Put yourself in that environment, because what's holding you back? It could be unfamiliarity. It could be nervousness and anxiety about talking to people and opening up to people you don't know. Whatever it could be, I guarantee that the fear is worse than what will actually happen. You're actually going to be blessed.
And I know one thing that I think I've heard that holds a lot of people back from really connecting, especially if it's a new church, is the feeling of, well, they all got it made, or they got it figured out, and they understand all this. I got issues, and I really don't want to get out there. But quite honestly, everyone who's walking through these doors is broken in some capacity. And we have a Savior that leads us to unbrokenness. And we are all in that need. And so I really want to push that and offer that up.
Good.
One thing on what does it look like to put God in the marriage? Honestly, and this is just from my own personal. I sometimes forget to pray for Shanti. And when things are better with us, I have been more careful in bringing her up to our Father and her needs and my asking, what can I do? You know, those sorts of things on a regular basis. I'm inviting God through my relationship with God to help my relationship with her.
And praying together is probably the most intimate thing.
Yeah.
Let me say something about that. Yeah. Praying together, when two people go into the throne room together, the two of you and the Lord, that is intimate. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about sexual intimacy, but that is so intimate at the heart and spiritual and emotional level that really binds us. And I would say this, some couples that we have found, one spouse isn't ready for that. And I would say, as Jeff just articulated, just go to prayer on your own. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I really believe that spouse, the Lord will work on their hearts to bring
them
around.
That's great. Well, and it's the answer to this next question that I just highlighted too. What is one simple practical step that couples could do this week to improve intimacy? I mean, truly, if you don't pray together, I know it might feel awkward. You haven't done it before, whatever. Just try it. Once you actually, as you were saying, once you actually go before God together, it is powerful.
And give each other grace in that, especially if this is a new thing for you. I mean, if it's not your jam to be praying together, my encouragement is, you know, even if one person's praying out loud and the other person doesn't, that's okay.
Totally okay.
Okay, yeah. So I'm going to just confess.
I know
my thought in this one was not the intimacy of spiritual oneness and all that. I was thinking sexual frequency.
But They're all together. Yep.
Now, for the guys who are in my camp, though, so could you answer the other?
It's not just the guys.
Yeah, I know. But since I'm a guy, I'm going to talk like a guy. Honestly, Shanti and I, we talked about how talking about these things is so important. Sometimes that feels like a bridge too far. Though, really, you're asking me to talk about it? I don't even know what I'm feeling or how to talk about it or whatever. And it feels weird or awkward. Again, this is not our book, but I'm going to just say there are other books out there will serve this purpose together. But the book that Shanti, we wrote about sex and secrets of sex and marriage, it was designed to be read together.
Yeah.
To be, if you read something out loud, then it's not me. These aren't my words, Shanti, that I wish you could hear, or Shanti saying, yeah, I wish you could hear this, Jeff. These are the authors and the therapist talking about this. And somehow it makes it a little easier to then begin conversations.
Let me give you an example. We did a podcast. Actually, I don't know if it was just me or if it was you and me. I can't remember. But we did a podcast with a couple that talks and writes and speaks on sexual issues, marriage issues, and other things. And they've also been married about maybe even longer than we have. And, you know, one of those couples that has been around the block and knows a lot. And yet when they said, we want to do a podcast with you on secrets of sex and marriage, the first thing they said when, you know, the podcast started, we started recording, was, I can't remember which one, but one of them said, you know, we have read a lot of books and we pick a book, you know, a few times a year to go through where we read it to each other. And so that's one of the things that, you know, is just something we do in our marriage. We've done it for years and years and years. We will read, you know, 3 or 4 pages and maybe talk about it. Maybe we won't, but we read it to each other. Your book, we started thinking we would do the same thing, read it out loud, 3 or 4 pages in a night, and then go on to the next one. They said, we got maybe 2 sentences. because it was like, wait, can we just talk about that for a second? Like, is that really how you feel? Is that, oh my gosh, I didn't even think that this might be something that was coming up. And so that's why Secrets of Sex and Marriage was designed that way. It was designed to be able to be read out loud so that you can actually start talking about it. So yes, I agree. If that intimacy means sexual intimacy, that's a big deal. Okay, next one. Can you read it?
What's one simple practical step? No, I got that one. Oh, that's the green. There's no way I can read.
Hold on. I'll mark it as answered. Okay.
There we go.
Okay.
You're going to have to read that one.
Okay. A thing we struggle with is our differences, mostly preferences. Roles in the house. Are you the messy person or do you want to have things cleaned up? What do you want to do with child discipline? What do you want to do with chores? It's not keeping score between us. It's the drain, as my spouse doesn't think XYZ is important, but to me, it's important.
Mm. We talked about this on the ride over here this morning.
About this particular question.
This particular question. Great question. And I'm going to let you answer this question.
Well, when in doubt, the answer is always Jesus.
Yeah.
Amen. All right, let's go. How do we break the cycle?
No, stop. The thing, I mean, we talked a little bit about the fact. Okay, I'll start.
I love the framework that you put in about pain and priorities.
Okay, you want me to?
Yeah,
okay.
I can't replicate that.
Okay, so one of the things that some counselors suggest, and I don't know if you do, you might say ignore everything she just said. But one of the things that some counselors suggest is when it comes to this kind of preferences kind of thing where things are important and maybe aren't being taken seriously by the spouse because they're not important to that person, is to actually create a twofold rating system where you say on when you get stuck on something, the importance of having the dishes put away before you go to bedtime, before you go to bed, like in the kitchen clean, like that, it just drives me nuts. Okay, so you do two ratings. You whatever that preferences thing is, you say on a scale of 1 to 10, here's how important this is to me. And second thing, here's how much pain happens when it doesn't happen this way. It's sort of the importance level and the pain level if it doesn't happen. And so that's one way to actually identify where there's a mismatch, and it's like, it's actually really important to me to have stuff done before we go to bed because, it's driving me nuts. But the pain level...
And so you'd put that, say, that's a 7.
That's a 7. But the pain level, if it's not, it's just annoying. It's not like it's this emotional thing.
It's only a 3
okay. Or whatever. And so, but then whatever it is that's the flip side of it that the spouse doesn't get, you can actually then identify, like something with parenting, for example. You could say, it's not a 3. The pain level, if you take our daughter and put her in a swing that doesn't have a safety seat and you push her so hard that it's going to go around the bar, I am, for the next 3 hours, I am picturing emergency rooms and hospital visits and death and whatever. I can't even, like, it's so important. The pain level is an 8. Mm. And you might handle things differently because you know
for
that.
Sure.
So, and do you have an answer to this?
I agree with everything Shante just said.
Okay.
Well, but let me add to that, too. There's a lot of different items up here, so I kind of want to touch on them just briefly. One of the things, at least in our house between Tony and myself, one of us is super organized and wants everything in its place, and the other one of us, things need to be kind of spread out and a little bit more unorganized,
fluid.
We'll say fluid.
Who's the fluid?
We're not gonna throw anyone under the bus. But
okay, wait. Can I just say?
Yes.
I wonder if we're the same because he is the neat one. I am the one. I don't see the clutter.
Right.
So
And how many spouses in this house are different in that way?
Where one person is messy, one person is the... Okay,
or
so
maybe
it's
not
messy,
huge, not that many.
Not a huge number.
But no doubt, you know, because we're all individuals, there's differences in our homes, right? For us, we really had to come to a place where we had to make a prioritization, not necessarily a ranking in that order, but keep the main thing the main thing, right? And it didn't necessarily matter that one of us couldn't keep the place spotless, because at the end of the day, there was so much going on, and we had a bazillion kids running around, and it was like nigh impossible to be able to keep a clean house or keep it organized, right? And we really had to focus in on what is really important and to be able to let some of those preferences go to the wayside, because it was about how am I appreciating and viewing and appreciating my spouse, right? Plus, it also helped when we had separate closets, so that did help. But, you know, when we talk about, you know, child discipline and, you know, chores and whatnot, you know, I'll go back to the old adage that not wrong, but different. You know, we all come from different families of origin, and we view child discipline and chores perhaps differently. It's really important to kind of unpack that together to ultimately be unified. And maybe it's to try one spouse's way to see how that works, and maybe the other spouse is another way. You know, for us, you know, at one point we had five kids running around, and discipline worked differently with each child because they were different personalities. So even though I had one thought coming in and Tony had a different thought, it was different for every child. And we really had to come together and kind of work through what worked and what didn't. But again, I would push and really emphasize the need for unity and being able to work through those things ahead of time.
Yeah, that's great. That is good. Okay, next question. Also got a lot of votes. How do we break the cycle of having the same argument over and over without any resolution? And I mean, to some degree, we've talked about that a little bit, right? But here's one of the principles for what it's worth. Often, not always, but often, if you're having the same argument over and over without any resolution, you're not arguing about what you think you're arguing about. Like, what's going on is that there's stuff running under the surface. It's what we've been talking about all weekend. It's what we were talking about today. It's the stuff that's running under the surface that is actually going on. So when someone is constantly telling their spouse, I feel like you never help with the chores. I feel like you never do, you know, this, and I'm always having to handle the things with the kids. I mean, first of all, as you know, you're not supposed to ever say always and never, because, you know, it's usually
you never
not,
say that.
Never. Yes, never. Because it's actually not accurate, but it feels like that in the moment. And so as an example of being able to sort of break that, If this is a constant thing, one of the things that I know counselors, and you can speak into this, but I know counselors will often say, is we have to actually get at what's actually being argued about. And so what's often in that case being argued about is, I feel really alone in this marriage. I feel like this is that you take what I do for granted, and I'm not getting any help, and I need partnership. I need to feel like what I care about matters to you. Like, all of that really doesn't have anything to do with whether the dishes get done or the laundry gets done. And so having that same argument over and over, in many cases, not all, but in many cases, it means you need to figure out what you're actually arguing about, which is why things like what Jeff was talking about with the books, of reading the other person's book and like highlighting about you, and then now you're reading a personalized copy when you hand it back. That's one of the ways to get at that stuff. I don't know if you...
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And one of the things that, you know, one of the things we have talked about here, even at Rest in Bible, if for those of you who've been through the How We Love series with Mylon Yurkovich, you know, it really comes back to oftentimes unresolved issues, you know, from early in the marriage or even our growing up years. And it's just things that we have brought into our marriage, right? And, you know, we oftentimes think that our spouse is attacking us at times, right? When it's really, it has nothing to do with the spouses. It's something that they are bringing in, and it's a core underlying issue. And it's important, as Shanti was saying, to really kind of unpack that and say, okay, where, what is the real core issue that we're dealing with here? Where is this hurt? Where is this pain coming from? And then being, once you address the source, that argument will actually end up. And sometimes it's helpful to bring a pastor along or a counselor along to help kind of unpack where that may be stemming from if you can't see it straight out.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, where there's counselors, that can be extremely helpful.
Yeah. Okay, next question. And there were actually three or four questions that had to do with resistant desire. So how do you get past being in a sexless marriage where you have the initiator desire, but your spouse is resistant, has the resistant desire? And so if Mike Seitzema was standing here on stage, he'd be able to give this very eloquent, clinical answer to that question. Since we're not clinicians in that way, here's what we would suggest. If that is, it may not be you, right? Maybe you have adult children and you know that there's an issue in their marriage. Maybe you have friends who this is an issue in their marriage and you've heard about it and you want to help them. Maybe you're a mentor to a couple, whatever it is. Mike created a resource website that is wonderful for stuff like this. And it's the same name as the book title. So it's secretsofsexandmarriage.com. Secretsofsexandmarriage.com. Seriously, like if you have any friends who are having issues in this area, write that down, secretsofsexandmarriage.com, and go to that website and you will see articles and resources on different things, like someone struggling with pornography. Here's some really good, helpful information. Someone has resistant desire. Here's some really good, helpful information and steps you can do. There's also really handy, there's a referral network, several referral networks and referral resources there that you can actually get. Okay, how do you find a Christian sex therapist? That kind of thing. So that would be my main thing, because resistant desire can come from so many different areas, but it is addressable.
That's right.
Like, absolutely, it can be 100% addressed. We've heard this hundreds and hundreds of times.
And that's what I would just add, that your story isn't fully written.
Oh, yeah.
It isn't over because you're in this particular space. I mean, there is hope. There are things that can be done with the right counsel, help, assistance by professionals. I mean, your story isn't hopeless. It isn't over.
Yeah. And I would say for the person with resistant desire, this is important. Like, you don't want to be stuck in this space of, like, you actually naturally, your way of being is a different way of being that's being masked right now by relationship hurt or past trauma or not, you know, whatever the issue is. That is something that can be addressed, and it's worth it. Absolutely worth it to address it.
So okay. What if your bedtime doesn't match your spouse's bedtime?
So who do we know like that?
I'm a lark. She's a night owl. And, you know, when it came down to it, in the early part of our marriage, I just went to bed. And Shanti didn't like that. So, but she wasn't sleepy. She wasn't, I mean, it just, her circadian rhythm, whatever you want to call it, it was just different than mine. But she made the choice. And I hate this, it sounds like she always made the movement toward me.
And it's not
in
true.
A lot
There's
of things.
Plenty of ways you've gone
sure.
this direction.
But
yeah.
In our case, she just came to bed and then read for however long she wanted to.
And sometimes, like, when the kids were teenagers and they were up later than you know, Jeff was, come to bed, read, and then go back downstairs. Like, he'd go to sleep.
That's right.
So.
But she prioritized us being in bed at the same time together.
But if that's not possible,
right.
Like, maybe you work opposite
yeah.
shifts
sure.
or whatever. If you're talking about sex, just remember that scheduling thing, okay? I know it sounds crazy if you've never done this, but once you try, like, okay, what would that look like to schedule this? Like, oh my gosh, like it actually really matters. And it's something that really draws a couple together quite often, so.
And nighttime isn't the only time for such activities. Just leave it there.
Yes. Okay, using the ashtray analogy, I love this question. I think this is so hilarious. Using the ashtray analogy, is there a kind way to tell my husband that I actually really did need a nice symmetrical ashtray without making him feel like a failure? Or do I just let it go? And it's basically like, this is, you know, this is the way it should be done, yeah. For example. And if... You might have a different answer than I do.
I think when things really, really matter to you, we both have to come to this relationship with humility. And I might have to recognize, you know, I didn't give it as good of a job as what you deserve. And I'll do better. Or maybe we can have some other way to give you that job that you so desire.
Yeah. So the answer is actually related to the next question, which is how do we effectively correct a husband, or maybe it's the other way around, without hurting them? Mm-hmm. Because it's relate. This is, we're saying the same thing here, basically.
And guys, just read the between the lines here. They want to honor us and don't want to create pain by, questioning or asking for something. I mean, that is the way that most of our wives
absolutely
feel about us.
So here is, we asked the men in the research this question, these questions. This is basically one of the main areas of investigation is, but if something matters to your wife, how do you... like correct it? How do you change it without telling him he failed? And so here's the answer that all the men said. First, there is no way to correct or challenge or whatever without making him feel like you're saying you failed. Like it just is, right? It's gonna sting to some degree.
At some level. But again, just like with pursuit with her, if she has been saying, I so appreciate you. I'm thankful for all of these things. Then, again, you've laid a foundation that even though something might have stung really quite a bit 10 years ago, but because of that foundation that you've laid underneath me, and I know you care about me and trust me and admire all of those things, then
it doesn't sting
nearly as much.
So one of the things that many of the men said that helps that process is, and this is going to sound funny, but the way that they put it is like make a sandwich of the criticism. And it's like, look, I am so grateful for what a great dad you are. Like, thank you so much for taking the kids when I was just beside myself having to finish that deadline. So appreciate it. If I could just ask, like, it really is important to me that when there's snow on the ground outside, that you have them put their gloves on so that they don't start crying because their hands are hurting because they're so cold. But listen, I am so grateful that, you know, that you are the dad you are. You've just made a praise sandwich of a criticism. And there's no way around the fact that he's going to see that as a criticism, but... A, just the same way that pursuit builds up security in a woman, consistent appreciation builds up security about your feelings in a man. It won't sting as much, and it's also, in the moment, it's usually an effective thing. Think about how you would do that at work. Like, if you want to be a good manager to somebody who works underneath you who did something wrong, the best way of motivating them isn't to say, you did that wrong. The best way is you worked on this for 20 hours. I know it was so tough. And thank you for doing that. You need to know that, you know, we had asked for the report to be formatted this way and it actually wasn't. So we're going to need you to fix that. But thank you so much. I'm so grateful that you put so much time into this and that you care about this. Praise sandwich. Same thing. So that's just a suggestion.
Let me just add a comment on that. And And that's absolutely the case. You know, as Jeff was saying, if you've laid the foundation, you know, most men can receive the criticism in a positive way.
Or women.
Yeah. Or women, for that matter. The other thing I would say, too, on the flip side, is does it really matter? Mm. And, you know, absolutely. If you've got to take the hill and you need something in a certain way, you know, regardless of which spouse you need, is asking for it. If it's really important, as Shanti was saying, then yeah, make sure you articulate that, but in a way that is still affirming to the other spouse. But at the same time, does it really matter? Is it more important to affirm the spouse in that moment versus let them know they didn't do it right?
Yeah.
And so it's something to think about.
Yes, yeah, very important. Okay, we had a couple of questions that were basically very similar, so I highlighted one of them. If believe the best is the goal, how do you retrain your automatic stress response so your first instinct shifts from defensiveness and into curiosity, restraint, and trust? Is that retraining the deeper skill to cultivate? I would just like to thank whatever marriage counselor asked that question. because the question actually gives you the answer. And the question a couple down, that the next one down, conflicted couples seem to have a really hard time choosing to believe the best about intentions and often believe the worst. What are the good steps to foster couples towards believing the best? Well, it's in the question above. So I'm going to point to retraining so that when you get that defensive feeling, when you feel like they don't care about me, she doesn't appreciate me, whatever it is, that instead you shift to curiosity and you shift to what is going on inside my spouse right now. I'm going to choose to believe that their intentions are good, but why is this happening this way? What is it that was happening in their life that they would respond in that way? Because I know that it sounds like they don't care, but I know that's not true. They do. And so curiosity is a really key tool. Like, seriously, if you start practicing that, you will see that it's like this amazing, eye-opening, door-opening tool curiosity is. Then restraint, which is basically thinking about emotional regulation. One of the things that happens is that we will jump and say things that hurt the other spouse's feelings. I guarantee you would not do the same thing with your boss. You cannot do that with your spouse. You can restrain yourself. You can learn emotional regulation because you do it at work. And so that will help. And then the trust, which is, again, sometimes it's the choice to say, he loves his daughter. He doesn't want her to die. I'm going to trust that he's thinking about this and that this is okay, even though it's not my way. So, yes, that retraining is the deeper skill.
And I would say it takes practice. It doesn't happen overnight, especially if you've been operating in a different operating system for so long. Mm. It takes some time. So give yourself and your spouse grace in that process as well. And, you know, when you think about that, it's really key to be able to, you know, go back to what Jeff was, you know, referencing, Philippians 4:8, you know, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, whatever is worthy of praise, dwell on those things, especially related to our spouses.
You know, one of the things that I think happens sometimes with getting this information is going, if we would have known this 20 years ago, it would have made such a difference. And where I come out on that one is it's that Chinese proverb, when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When's the second best time? Now.
Today.
So just start. You got years ahead of you. They can be great years.
Yep. I'm sorry. I'm going to go to question number two there. Should you put beans in chili con carne? I'm
going to draw a line on that one. Yes. And red kidney beans only. Don't throw in those Great Northerns or the pin. Oh, just for me, kidney beans. That's it.
Amen. Okay. I'm seeing more stressed marriages, and people say life feels more stressful or off lately. Over the last 20 years of your research, are couples' responses changing in ways that reflect that, or are different themes emerging, or is that just me? No, it's not just you. So here is one of the things. This is way too big to get into in detail, but basically one of the things that's been happening, especially the last 10 to 15 years, is that the mental health crisis, mental health is actually getting worse and worse and worse. And that process has made things in marriage more and more and more difficult, in part because one of the problems is we have lost some of the ability to handle discomfort. And we've lost the ability to like emotionally regulate. Like, these are all things that it used to be you learned how to do interpersonal conflict and how to emotionally regulate when you felt stupid. When you were in middle school, you were 12 years old, such and such happened, and you learned that if you said this, you felt really embarrassed, and so the next time you tried saying it differently. Well, guess what? That doesn't happen when you're 11, 12, 13 as much anymore because you're texting everything. Or everything is mediated by screens and you don't have those difficult conversations. And so suddenly, people who we used to learn that when you were in middle school and high school, suddenly you're starting to learn that when you're in your 20s and in your 30s and you're trying to practice that for the first time. It is not surprising that to some degree is causing more mental health issues and is causing more marriage issues. And so we don't have time to really get into that. That's a whole nother conversation. But yes, that is one thing that is happening. Okay, what do you want to do?
Since we have...
We only have a couple of minutes.
We have some homework.
Oh, we do. Should we answer a couple more questions or should we move on to our... We got to get to the closeout, probably.
These folks have... They've been troopers.
They have been. Like, you got here at 8:30 this morning.
I think we move to the...
To finishing it out?
To finishing it out. Is that okay?
Is that okay with everybody? All right.
We didn't get to all the questions. Obviously, we all knew that we wouldn't. But, you know,
Thank you guys for the questions. Hopefully there were some things there.
So...
Okay. So what we're going to do, we're going to give you some... things to talk about and think about over the course of the next day or two, week or two, month or two. And we're going to ask you to take some pictures. Okay? So first thing, I want everybody to seriously think about this question and take a picture of the screen, because everybody can answer this question in a positive way. What are five things about my spouse that I deeply appreciate and I can remind myself of when we're at odds or I am disappointed?
Can I jump in real quick?
Absolutely.
So we touched a little bit up here about the neatness versus fluid organizational style in homes. And I got to tell you, this thing here was big for me, because some of those times that we... one of us slept in the guest room was because of that topic. It would just spiral and become something bigger than it probably should have been. And one day, you know, kind of coming home and there's with the two kids and our island was used to pile up mail that was maybe 2-3 months old, you know, and so it had a purpose that wasn't its original design. And, you know, the living room is full of toys and there are
Legos everywhere,
all of that stuff. And me, who likes things kind of put in their place, I for some reason saw this stuff with different eyes. It had created a lot of headache and heartache in our relationship. And I don't know if it was, it was God, you know, allowed me to see it with different eyes. And when I saw those toys there, I thought back to, you know, I could have and did have my own kind of space, apartment, et cetera, where everything was in order. And I was alone. Those toys there are evidence of these two little kids that think I'm pretty cool and love it when I come home from work. That male there on that island is evidence of Shanti. And she loves me. And she does amazing, amazing things in our marriage and in my life. And I saw it not as a frustration, but as evidence of something that is great in my life. And it reminded me, my favorite scripture in all of the Bible is Psalm 103:2, which it's a simple scripture. It says, "Praise the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits." The psalmist, perhaps at this point, was worried, struggling, whatever, but he was able to remind himself of all of the amazing things that God had done in his life. And when we do that, when we run through our list of good things, it changes how we approach the future, the courage it gives us, the hope it gives us. And so if you will practice these things of identifying these things and reminding yourself, I guarantee it. It will matter in your relationship.
And for those of you who are in a struggling place, it doesn't mean that by thinking about some of the good things that you're ignoring the bad
ones. That's right.
Right? Those things may be very real. And if you're here in that place, thank you for coming. Because this shows that you want to still try to figure out how to have hope in your marriage. It's just that this is one of the ways that God will use to give you hope in your marriage. Okay, so that's your personal reflection. That's just you, between you and God. Okay, question number one. This is something for the two of you to talk through at some point. Take a picture, please. Although I don't mean to, I am sure that there are times when I communicate to you a lack of love or appreciation. Can you give me an example? Or for the brave at heart, examples. And here's the key. When you hear the example from your spouse, it will naturally, I guarantee, like 100% of the people in here are at risk of saying, you shouldn't feel that way. Oh, you have different insecurities, different perspectives than I do. And so you may think that is the most ridiculous thing, but take it seriously, as that is quite often a very real thing that many other spouses would probably feel the same way, even if you wouldn't. Okay, question number two. What are those little things that communicate that love and or appreciation to you? This is the word cloud. Okay, what are those little things? And then remember, when your spouse does those or says those, believe that they felt that way all along. Believe the best of their intentions, because they just didn't know that they mattered. Okay, question number three. Which habit of the happy marriages should we pick to work on? One of the things that I'm going to suggest to you is, you know, we were talking last night, what are the habits, what are the actions, the happy marriages? It is very tempting after a weekend like this to try to pick, like, oh my gosh, we got to do all these things, right?
And the happiest couples didn't.
No, they didn't do them all. No, the only one they all did was believing the best, right? But not everybody. Some people didn't work it out in the morning when they went to bed mad. Like, some people did other things. And so the key is just pick one thing that you want to start with and that you think you can do, and then you can build from there. But do one thing first. Okay. Then the last question is what I was telling you guys about that chart. Knowing that there are different types of desire, which one of those is our desire pattern? Okay. And how can we work with that rather than against it? based on the things we were talking about last night. One of the things that I'm going to suggest as we close here, and then we'll turn it over to Casey, is I would urge you, all of you, to make a plan of some kind personally in your marriage together, or just you personally, depending on where you are, to keep growing, to keep learning, to try to figure out ways to keep developing, whether that's reading books or listening to podcasts or whatever it is, that you can keep learning in these ways and applying them. We have a weekly blog that we put out. We have a podcast that we do every week or every 2 weeks, depending on how much money we have for producing production. But I hope that even if it's not our stuff, that you will look at the good things that are out there, including all the stuff that Rustin Bible puts out to help couples. So
thank you all for letting us be with you.
Thank you, guys.